Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Fighter's Voice with Don McGuire, presented by Finished MMA and the United Way Merced.
Welcome to The Fighter's Voice. I'm your host, Don McGuire. You know, as usual on Wednesday, we run an afternoon show, but I had to add a special guest to the show before we do our weekly special, that being Jamie Huey. Jamie, welcome to the program, brother.
Hey, man. It's good to be on, brother. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, I can hear you just fine, man. You know,
perfect.
We look at all the aspects that you've added to your, you know, I guess you'd say portfolio in the sport, and you truly have been a success in the sport. What was it about bare-knuckle boxing that truly made that ultimate decision and defined in your heart as a man that you were going to take this venture, this step into that world?
You know, it's actually a lot of it was you and Stitch did your show, and you guys kind of went into detail on it. I mean, I have to be honest, man, I was as a guy that kind of moonlights as a cut, man, I was really 100% against it when it first initially rolled out. I've had a lot of friends that had very successful amateur boxing careers, and it was cut short due to hand injury. So it was something that was really my main concern initially. But I actually ran into a fighter named, I think Maurice Jackson, I think is his name, over at the City Athletic Boxing Gym here in town in Vegas. And we had a pretty good discussion about it as well. And he says, you know, coach, he goes, really what you need to do is you got to go in there, you got to throw 90% of your punches at about 40% power. And that kind of made some sense to me. And then really, you know, you and Stitch having that conversation about it on your show was really an eye opener. I mean, Stitch is obviously somebody that we all look up to and he's really the ambassador of Cutman. So hearing him kind of co-sign off on it, I thought, you know, maybe I'll give this a second look and I'll give it some thought and maybe even get involved, you know, and so at least going into it, when I'm coming out of it, at least I know what I'm talking about instead of making an assumption without ever seeing it firsthand. So that's kind of where I'm at. I've got my guy Keith Berry fighting on a card in Wyoming. I think it's November. I have to look at my calendar. I'm all over the place.
Yeah, November 9th, I believe, isn't it?
There you go. That sounds right. Yep.
Yeah. You know, it's crazy because I was speaking with you before we went live, and we're on the iHeart and Univision syndicated show today. Usually I do live feeds just for people on Facebook and social media, but I wanted to bring you on in this aspect. You know, having Brendan Ward on, and then having Johnny Hendricks on the last Friday and having Kendall Grove on the Tuesday before, what I'm taking from the aspect of this new era, as everybody is calling it, is that a lot of fighters were relatively bored with the sport of mixed martial arts. They weren't content with MMA anymore. They really didn't give a crap about their career. And to them, this is all a new breath. It's a breath of fresh air. When you look at it in that aspect, Jamie, you're a striking coach. You've been involved with Tough. You've been involved with the sport for many, many years. As you said, you even manage fighters that are in, you know, the sweet science today and that are champions. What do you feel when you hear fighters say that they were bored with their sport that they were in, but now they feel that they're complete stepping into this new retrospect of the sport?
Well, you know, it's kind of history repeats itself and things come full circle. And this kind of is taking it back to, you know, the initial gladiator, you know, the initial sport of, you know, I mean, you call it MMA, you can call it bare knuckle fighting, you call it whatever you want, but it really kind of takes it back into the essence of what, you know, they were doing in Rome, you know, so many years ago. I like it. It's another avenue. I mean, I'm a boxing guy. That's my background. That's what I did. That's what I competed in. That's what I've coached even now when I work with, you know, MMA fighters or whatnot. But I mean, I'm not a jiu-jitsu guy. I didn't wrestle in high school. So that's really kind of my forte. But I like the fact that there's all these other kind of subsidiaries of the sport that are kind of popping up and giving guys an opportunity to compete. I'm all for it, as long as it can be done safely and not at the expense of, you know, cutting a guy's career short because of specific injuries. That's really my biggest concern. But as far as giving guys other opportunities to go out there and compete, you know, it's going to be different, but heck, why not? You know, I mean, it's kind of like comparing basketball to football. They both got their place. They're different, but equal. I don't know what's next after this. I mean, it's getting to be as, I don't want to say primitive, or maybe a better word is pure, with things like bare knuckle fighting. I mean, that's, there's no gloves, there's no hand wraps. It's two guys scrapping in the center of a cage or a ring. I haven't been a part of it yet. So I don't have enough, you know, experience to really pretend that I'm an expert in it. But, you know, I've been rethinking a lot of things. It's initially, even as a boxer, I wasn't really a big MMA guy. I've been involved in it for so long, from back at Team Quest, now down here to Extreme Couture and over at Rain with Mark Munoz and all these places, that I've got a better understanding only because I put myself in those positions, learn more about it. So as far as the bare knuckle, I'm excited to be a part of it, man.
I'm stoked. Yeah. When I got that call from you, when we talked on the phone, I was like, yeah, because what I'm finding is, with this new retrospective of the sport, what I'm finding is there's a lot of fighters that have actually stepped away and retired, but now see this new facet and they're reinvigorated. They're coming back, and a lot of the fans want to see it. You know, we talked about it. You watched the live feed. You know, you even said yourself, you're not one of the greatest, you know, fans of mixed martial arts or MMA in that aspect. You know, neither am I, because I got my start in boxing, you know, but when you sit back and you were perplexing that decision, what was it that ultimately led you? I mean, because, Jamie, you think about it. You've been out of the sport in that aspect for a minute. You know, the last sanctioned bare-knuckle fight was in 1894, if most people don't know. The last sanctioned bare-knuckle was in 1894. So in that retrospect, you're a pioneer. You're part of the beginning of this new era. What was the thoughts that you took away from it, not just as a warrior, but as a man, reflecting back at your career now moving forward?
That's a great question. You know, and I, to be honest with you, I've never really thought of that in that respect of, you know, the old bare knuckle boxing. I mean, there's, you know, I had read something that I think it was like a John L. Sullivan fight, but he fought one fight, went like two hours. And they used to mutually agree when the round was over. One guy would kind of whisper in the other guy's ear. He would say, all right, man, let's take a break. And then they would both go back to their respective corners. And when they got back to their respective corners, a lot of the time their coach or their manager at the time would give them whiskey to drink in between rounds. So I don't know if that's where it's going next, man, but you never know.
Right. You kind of look at it, and it's a tremendous attribute either way. You know, me and Stitch both are old-timers in this sport. And, you know, I was glad to see it happen. When I first got hit by both promotions to interview their fighters and share their fighters, I was like, are you sure you want them on my show? Because I'm going to tell it like it is. But the more I interviewed the fighters, the more I looked into it, the more I fell in love with it, the more I got a greater understanding of what it is. And, you know, you look at, man, he was a prime example, Johnny Hendricks. He says, man, I had 7 fights left on my contract. I did not want to be in MMA anymore. I didn't care if I lost. I didn't care if I was on weight. I just didn't want to be there. He said, so when I left MMA, that part of the sport died in me. I didn't think it was going to ever be, you know, coming back in any retrospect. And then you have this promotion call you when your last 7 fights are losses, and then yet they tell you they want to give you an opportunity to fight in their promotion and bring you back for what you've done in the sport. You know, when you hear stories like that, it truly is making its way across the sport as we know it, and it's bringing back fighters that had looked at themselves that they felt they were over the hill, they were too old. And I'm finding through my listeners, I'm finding through social media, that a lot of the sport and a lot of the fans want to see fighters like that come back and in this essence. You know, when you look at it, how does it make Jamie Huey feel know that in just a short while you're going to be making your comeback? What is that moment going to mean to you and your family?
Well, yeah, I mean, I'm confused by the question. My comeback in regards to me fighting?
Yeah.
Oh, I don't have any ambitions. I'm 45. I had my fun. I fought. I had a bunch of amateur boxing matches. I was successful in the several professional boxing matches I had. If I was 20 years younger, I'd jump right in the water, man. I'd be all absolutely in for that. But as far as from my coaching standpoint of taking my kid Keith Berry down there, I'm excited. And you know, it's interesting what you had said about Johnny Hendricks, because I had a kid named Mike Pierce who we fought Johnny Hendricks at UFC 133. We lost a split decision. It was a really close fight. But I know exactly what Johnny's talking about when he says that he just lost passion for the sport, and that happens. I mean, as fighters, a lot of us, we know when we're done, and some of us don't know when we're done, and some of us end up staying around too long just to get another payday out of it. If Johnny really lost his passion in MMA and he's kind of got a rebirth in the bare knuckle boxing, then yeah, absolutely, man. What a great opportunity, and they pay well too. That's the other thing. I mean,
yeah.
you could get cut from the UFC and you could fight in some of these smaller promotions. And by the time you pay your coach and your travel and, you know, maybe you miss some time off work, you kind of break even or you take a couple bucks home, but it's not much. I was excited to see that they're really taking care of these guys. So for a guy like Johnny Hendricks, who's been a high level competitor, you know, since he was a kid, this gives him another opportunity to compete and do something that he's excited in. Yeah, I'm all for it, man. Absolutely.
Yeah, you know, and it kind of stymied me last night with Brennan Ward, who said he never really wanted to fight MMA. He just did it because he was broke. He needed $1,000, and he found himself in the sport, you know, 14, 15 fight later, you know, not wanting to do this anymore. He said, you know, the only fight that was really relative to him was his outing with Syed Awad. He said, and after that, he just gave up like Hendricks did. And he said, but getting this phone call from Bare Knuckle Boxing was truly an aspect that he feels will define him. Do you think this is going to start perplexing throughout the sport, Jamie? Do you think we're going to start finding a lot of crossover or transitional fighters from MMA into Bare Knuckle?
Well, you know, so as somebody that's been involved in boxing and or MMA for 25 years, I'm a firm believer in competition makes everybody better. And we could be talking about, we could be talking about combat sports. We could be talking about, Nevada, they're getting ready to vote the NVE, the power company versus the solar companies, right? I've been in telecommunications since, you know, 20 years. Back when I first started, it was just cable. You got cable. You got it or you didn't. If you didn't like it, too bad. Go buy a VCR. And then the Telecommunications Act of 99 basically let the phone companies dive into the cable business, the cable business dive into the phone companies. My point going full circle with that is competition makes everybody better. So as far as the standpoint of the UFC, they're trying to get the best possible competitors they can. Bellator's competing with them. That's a great thing. The PFL, Racefo, the Professional Fighters League, man, they've got a hell of a product right now. Those guys are scrapping for $1 million, man. I mean, as a cut, man, I've never been busier than I am when I'm working one of those shows. So now you got bare knuckle boxing coming into it. It will be interesting to see what happens with legislation in regards to maybe some of these guys getting locked up in a contract like the UFC. But if some of these guys have an option of jumping from one promotion to the other, one, I don't know if you want to call it a different sport or not, I think it's better for everybody because it's going to create competition. And these guys that are promoting these shows are going to have access not only to a bigger pool of fighters if it becomes a situation where guys are able to jump back and forth, but there's going to be a lot more money because they're going to be competing for those names to put them on the card. So I don't see that this can't be anything but good for the fighters and the fans specifically.
Yeah, I feel you there. You know, you look back at your career, it's a tremendous career. You know, you call yourself, you know, somewhat of a cut man, but, you know, you're well more defined in the sport than you're willing to admit, my friend. You go back through the tough organization, several aspects of that. You go to the boxing world, several aspects of that. What is it that truly defines you, my brother, in creating Warriors and creating that pathway for them? What is it that's instilled in you, and who gave you that intent and giving greatness to others?
Man, I always had really good coaches. My first amateur boxing coach, Bill Mertz, was the president of USA Boxing. He was just really kind of, for me, kind of like a dad to some degree, somebody to look up to if you don't have that at home. I ended up co-founding a amateur boxing program that we ran successfully for 15 years. It was all mostly kids. What I get out of it personally is I like learning. So I've 25 years, I've tried to put myself in every possible situation I can be. I've done everything there is to be in boxing, from amateur to professional, to a coach, to a referee, to a judge. I've done just about everything you could do, a matchmaker, with the exception of maybe a timekeeper. I've never been a timekeeper, cut man. I've tried to learn as much as I could, but as far as, so that's one thing that really, you know, getting into MMA, it was new for me. It was something completely different. As far as, you know, giving back, really, it's the relationships that you build with these people. I mean, you and me both have a lot of mutual friends. We've never really sat down and hung out and had a beer, but I feel like I already know you just based on your relationship with Zach and James and people that I'm close to. So for me, really, you know, all the cameras and the lights and all the, you know, glitz and glamour and all the bullshit. I mean, sorry, I don't know if I can swear, but
oh, yeah, you're good.
That comes with it. Okay. It really doesn't mean anything, man. After you do this for a while, you just it all just becomes like whatever. But what's left at the end of it is relationships and friendships that you've made with people. Beautiful thing, man. I could go just about anywhere in the world, and I probably know someone somewhere. I mean, I could go to Brazil. I've got guys that I coached on The Ultimate Fighter. I've got friends in Kansas City. I've got friends in Florida. I've got friends in, you know, other countries. So, for me, that's really where it's at, is that's the take back for me, is the relationships and the friendships that I get to build with all these people. I feel lucky to be able to be in that position.
I feel you there, man. I got to be honest with you. You know, after 23 years of trying to build a brand, market myself, get myself in this sport, these last few years have been quite humbling. You know, you come home and you look at your caller ID, and I'll be honest, man. Sometimes I'm like, holy crap, you know. And I'm not gonna say that I get fanboyed. It's a respect thing. And like mm-hmm. you say, in this sport, there's 1% of the sport that truly clings to each other, and it takes a long time to get there. You know, the relationships that I've established with fighters across the world is somewhat like you. You know, I could pick up the phone and call them any day of the week. There's one person that I hold near and dear, and that's, you know, Joe Daddy Stevenson. You know, me and him, we have a relationship like no other. And, you know, if I could just walk away with one relationship like that in this sport, then I feel I've done my job. You know, you're a tremendous attribute to the sport. Like you said, you're a boxer first, you're a striking coach, and you've had a tremendous, you know, path put in front of you. What was it like being in Tough 17, being on, you know, especially the last two episodes with Chael Sonnen, and what were your thoughts and your takeaways from that aspect of you?
Oh, man. I mean, God, where to start on that experience? That was the first season I ever had the honor to coach the Ultimate Fighter. And, I mean, it was – those guys are lifelong friends. I mean, I see Uriah Hall at the gym all the time. His head coach, Clayton Hires, who was also a coach on the team, he's my best friend. He's my son's godfather. You know, when Chael was getting ready to fight Vanderlei, I went up to his house and stayed with him for about a week and a half to get ready for that. Every time I go to Kansas City, I call Zach Cummings. I'm like, hey, man, I got a guy, you know, a girl fighting on the Invicta, bro. I want you to come and help me in the corner. And he's always there for me. You know, I mean, it's crazy. The sport is just, you know, I had to do something extremely uncomfortable. I had to, my fighter, Keith Berry, fought one of my guys from season 17, Kevin Casey at Bellator, and I had to corner against Kevin, and it kind of hurt my heart, man. But it just, you know, you kind of get past some of that stuff. But overall that season, I mean, it was just, you know, Mike Tyson came on. We got to spend 30 minutes just sitting down, just talking to Mike about life and boxing and coaching. And, I you know, there's so many takeaways from it, man. It was a great experience. You know, the Brazil season was a whole different experience, and that definitely had its highs there as well. But something about 17, specifically that season, that team, and it wasn't just the guys on our team. I mean, I got to be really good friends with Josh Simon before he passed. To this day, I've got his foundation that I wear on my Cutman jacket. So again, I mean, coming full season, the TV show, it came and went. I got to travel. I got to do some cool stuff. But when it's all said and done, man, I really got to make some friends that I feel like I have for life. And for me, that's the biggest takeaway, because eventually everything else goes away. The notoriety, the money, you know, if there's any type of, you know, whatever, right? Really what you want at the end of it, man, is you want some really good friends, you want some relationships, and you want some good experiences. And if you can walk away with that, then you really did something.
Yeah, I feel you there. You know, it was tremendous for me, because that's kind of how me and you started talking. Was I miscorrelated something in a post, and you hit me up and you said, what? And so I reconfigured it and let you know what was up. You know, me and Zach Cummings go back to when Zach Cummings was 10 years old. So to see him now in the sport where he's at, you know, from Tough 17 onward, it was just a tremendous opportunity. And I think the Tough series is tremendous in a lot of ways. It gives fighters an opportunity to show the world what they're about without the UFC actually bringing them in and putting them up against somebody that, you know, they'll never do anything good against. I think it's a fair base work ground to be on. You know, you come from boxing. That's my baby. That's what I love. You know, what was it about boxing that enthralled you to the point that, I believe you had two pro fights, didn't you?
I did, yep.
Yeah, you look at that. What was it that drove you to that aspect? I mean, because I know for me as a kid, I used to love Sundays, Wide World of Sports, man, Howard Cosell, and, you know, always make sure that I was in front of the television. What was it that made you take it that step further?
You know, I my first recollection of boxing growing up, I got in a fight with a kid on the playground because he told me that Bruce Lee could beat up Mike Tyson. You grew up at my I'm 45, man. When you grew up, Mike Tyson couldn't do anything wrong back then, you know, the early Mike. He got off track for a while, but he's back on now. So, you know, probably part of it was, my dad was a big, huge Marvin Hagler fan. And, you know, he was around, then he wasn't around. It was kind of one of those deals. I don't know, maybe inadvertently I got involved in it, maybe because of some childhood stuff. I don't know. I got a real late start. I wish I would have started when I was, I've had kids that were 8 years old that have boxed all the way up to 100, 200 amateur fights. I've got a girl that's getting ready to probably make the Olympic team in 2020. But so there's there's that thing where you start when you're young, you get those opportunities and experience. But I didn't start boxing until I was 19. I boxed up until I was about 29, and then I had a couple professional fights. I had some medical things going on, and you know, I had a good job making money. So you know what, maybe I'll start thinking about taking the next avenue into coaching. So you know, I there's a lot of things I think that took me to boxing. I was kind of a trouble kid. I got in a lot of trouble, in and out of foster homes and different things. So for me, it was really kind of, you know, the saying is boxing saved my life, but you know, maybe that's true, maybe it's not, but I feel like it is, because I was definitely headed nowhere fast. And boxing really kind of gave me some confidence. It gave me some focus. It gave me some goals. It taught me how to be a man. It's what I know. It's what I got good at. And so that's the opportunity I have to pass that on to other fighters. Even my amateur team, for me, it was really therapeutic. I guess it was my boot camp of life, if I had to kind of put a label on it.
Most definitely. I like that. You know, if you had to make a statement, brother, about what, you know, the sport has meant to you, what moving forward means to you, and those that are in your everyday life, what intent they instill in you, and what type of thanks you would like to give them back, what would that statement be?
Well, you know, I'll use my son as an example. I have a 3-year-old. I'm 45, just had my first one. I'll be 45 in December. One thing my son will box. My thought in my head is, we're going to set a goal. He's going to have 20 amateur boxing matches. And if he comes to me at some point and says, Dad, my heart's not in this. I don't want to do this anymore. After 20, I don't care if he wants to play the piano or if he wants to, you know, whatever he wants, whatever he decides that he wants to be passionate about. But for me, it's the foundation that he's going to build every single thing else on his life. You know, getting those lessons of going to the gym when you're tired, man, you just don't want to be there, but you go anywhere. Getting in there, sparring guys that you really don't want to be in there. You guys have got more experience or stronger, but you get through it anyway. Looking across the ring at a guy that you have no ill will, you don't know him, but you know when that bell rings, you're going to go out there and punches are going to start throwing. Dealing with the fear. People talk about fear of overcoming fear. Maybe that's true for some people. Not everybody overcomes fear. But what happens is everybody at some point, if you deal with it enough times, you learn how to exactly do that, deal with it. And so those are the lessons that I want for my son, is being confident and not necessarily even overcoming fear, but knowing how to get through it anyway. So the mental aspect of the fight game is really the most important piece, because at some point everybody knows how to fight if you do it long enough. There's levels, but it's how do you think at that point? That's what gets fighters over that hump of being a prospect, a contender, to a champion. I mean, if you can think under those stressful times, that's life, man. You can apply that to anything you do.
Most definitely. I like the way you put that, too. You know, Coach, if there was I guess the best way to say it is, this is kind of a weird question. When it's all said and done and it's time for you to hang up the gloves and step away from all aspects of the sport, how would you most like to be remembered, Jamie?
Respected, definitely. Great. Another great question. Respected by my peers, important piece of it for me. I'm not trying to be a famous guy. I don't care about that anymore. Maybe early, you know, when you first start off, you think that there's some hope that you're going to get rich and you're going to be famous. And the reality of that for most of us isn't a reality. And honestly, I don't even care about that anymore. But being able to be respected by by the people that I work with and next to is definitely important for me. I mean, I'm jumping on a plane Thursday to go over to the Professional Fighters League, and I get to work with guys like Dean over at Bellator, Don House. For me, that's an honor. I get to, you know, I'm in positions where I get to work with Stitch and these guys, and I look at these guys like, you know, like, hey, you know, this is really cool. We get to do this shit. Like, how lucky are we here to be here? I mean, yes, we all worked and put ourselves in positions to be successful to be here, but these guys are all true professionals. And if I, when it's all said and done, if I have the respect from guys like that, that's all I need.
I feel you there, man. So me and Stitch are best friends in life, and we're brothers. And you know, and then I'm twice as lucky because me and Dean Lassiter are the same way. And it's like you sit back and you relish in those moments. And truly, that's what people ask me, Don. Why do you bring the inner workings of the sport on the show? Well, why not? They deserve it. If there was no inner workings, there would be no sport. You know, and I think, as cut, man, I think one thing that people need to realize and understand, and I believe you're the same exact way because I follow you, we're friends on Facebook, and, you know, I see how you are. And I think Stitch says it the best, that a true cut man will look at every person in the ring or in the cage as their children. Otherwise, they're not doing their job properly. You know, you're there to protect one just as much as you are the other. So with that being said, in the cut man aspect, you know, would you say that that truly brought you 360 and defined you in the aspect that you wanted to be in the sport?
I mean, I think it's definitely it's a super important piece of it. I kind of early, you know, I kind of branded myself early as, you know, Coach Jamie Huey. It's my Twitter, it's my Instagram at Coach Jamie Huey. So I've kind of branded myself because really that's where I've kind of probably put the most time in. But I've done everything but a timekeeper. So I've really tried to get out there and get my hands in different things and continue to learn and continue to get better in every aspect, not just in boxing or just in MMA, but in life, every, you know, and I fail just as often as I succeed at that. But I continue to try to put myself out there in uncomfortable situations because I want to see how I respond. As far as the cut man goes, I love it. I mean, I get to travel, I get to work with professionals. I don't have necessarily the same, I don't have some of the same type of, responsibilities or stresses, as a cut man, as I do as a coach, you know, making weight, you know, the mental aspect, my fighter prepared for a fight. The mental aspect of after the fight, if we win or if we lose, because it's not just about, well, you lost, we're going to try it next time. It's not just about, well, we won, so we did everything right. I mean, if you win, there's still lessons in there. There's still pieces that you got to take out and you got to look at and say, okay, we could have did this better. So let's focus on our next training camp. We won, but we want to focus on fixing these little things. When you lose, I mean, there's a whole plethora of different things that go into that as well. So there's I love the cut man stuff. I'll always be a coach though. I mean, I'll never abandon one for the other. I'm just going to try to do as many things as I can. I mean, if I get a phone call one day and somebody wants me to be a matchmaker, and if I'm in the place and have the time to do it without sacrificing any time at home with my wife and my son, then I'm up for that as well. But I mean, as you know, life's a balance, man. So you really got to kind of find that comfortable spot where you're not taking anything away out of the important things, but at the same time, you still get to put yourself in different situations to learn.
Yeah, you know, I don't think I could have said it better myself. You know, we got to overcome our adversities. We got to persevere. Here we are. You know, I just broke my foot in four places, about 9 days ago, and
yeah,
I've been
doing
shows ever since, man. You know, it's like people don't understand the sport's not going to wait for you, man. You got to keep the show going, whether you're in pain or not. You know, that's just life. And this sport, if you take a brief moment of silence and you're forgotten, and I worked too hard to be one of those guys, bro. You know, Jamie, it was an honor to have you on today, Coach. You truly are a true facet of the sport. What you're doing with the champions and even the amateurs is tremendous, and it says a lot about you in life. You know, like I said, I'm honored you came on the show today. I'm going to pass the mic to you if there's any friends or family, any social media sites, or just anything else you'd like to add to the program. The floor is yours, sir.
Thank you, man. Well, you know, I'll take the opportunity, I guess, to promote a couple things I'm doing. I've got I'm going to the Professional Fighters League. This Saturday we'll be in New Orleans. I come back, I believe, on the 12th. If they've got everything set up, I'll be cornering WBU Cruiserweight World Champion Dennis Morris at the Rio here in Vegas. The following weekend, I fly out to Washington, D.C. for the Fighters League. I've got Keith Berry coming up on the Bare Knuckle Boxing. And there was a couple other things, but they're kind of escaping my mind. I got to have my calendar in front of me, man. I got hit in the head too many times. I can't remember stuff like I used to. Yeah, man, that's really it, man. Like I said, I'm just I feel lucky to have the friendships and the relationships and opportunities that that I'm going to be involved in, and you know, encourage anybody to get involved, man. I mean, just, you know, don't sit on your hands. Get out there, do something. There's a lot of opportunities, especially with all these new promotions and subsidiaries of the MMA and boxing that are popping up with the bare knuckle boxing and stuff. So it's I think it's exciting times for guys like us.
Yeah, it truly is. I got to tell you, I'm very excited for this aspect of the sport. You know, we look at the sport of MMA and there's promotions popping up every day. It's over inundated. And I think Brendan Ward said it best last night before I let you go. Before, when you used to look at the UFC, you knew who was fighting. Now they throw up a card, and you'll be lucky if you even recognize one name on the card. And,
oh, yeah.
You know,
that's,
and then you look at their records.
Yeah.
Well, they, you know, and I'll be honest with you, I think it's two fight cards away, but they got Shlemenko fighting, what's her name? Oh, my God, from The Ultimate Fighter, the one that had the kidney problems, Sajara Eubanks, as the main card.
Oh, yeah.
As the main card, and I think that's a joke. I think that that's what's declining the aspect of the UFC. You know, before we used to look at the UFC as, you know, it was almost like the White House and of the sport. Now it's truly just become a house, you know, and I think Bellator is pulling the numbers on them, so I think the UFC needs to rethink their train of thought and look at the way they're doing things, because there's truly more prevalent fighters out there that deserve a main card than somebody who's 3-1. And I'm not knocking anybody, but
3-2.
When you look at,
I think she's 3-2. Yeah.
Three. That makes it worse, bro.
Yeah. I know. I mean, God bless her. I'm glad she's getting the opportunity. But I agree. I mean, here's the best, you know, I'm for and also against certain aspects of the Ollie Act, right? And the problem is there's really three entities that need to be represented in the sport. You need to look out for the fans, because they're the guys that buy the tickets. You got to look out the fighters, because they're the ones that are putting it out there. And then there's got to be some representation for the promoters, because they're the ones that are putting their money out, right? So anytime that starts to kind of teeter-totter and one's getting bigger than the other, it really needs to be kind of an even balance there. So, you know, I'm great. It's great these fighters are getting all these different opportunities, but, man, what MMA needs to do is you need to stop thinking of it like boxing, because, I mean, you and me are boxing guys. We could sit here and talk all day around all the problems that boxing has. I'm excited because some of these young guys coming up are saying, you know what, I don't care about a record. Like my coach Kenny Adams says, records are for DJs. And I've always respected that about MMA, because a record doesn't necessarily tell the whole story. My boss, I get a paycheck every 2 weeks from a guy named Randy Couture, one of the greatest fighters of all time. Retired, he was 19 wins and 10 losses. But you know what? Who cares? Because he fought everybody, right? Boxing is so caught up in these records that it's kind of killing it, you know. And then you get a card, and it's like you were talking about, you know, the MMA. You get one good fight, and then you get a whole bunch of crap underneath it. Kid Celso, who fought on a Floyd Mayweather card in Portland back when Floyd fought Sean Bay Mitchell. Floyd made $6 million, which was peanuts for him back then, but he made $6 million. My guy was on the card. He made like $1,200. So there's, you know, you get one good, you know, they want you to buy an $80 pay-per-view, but they only really want to give you one good fight on it, you know. Now, if MMA starts to kind of follow that path, it's not going to be good for MMA. So we'll see what happens. I'm hoping that's not the route they take, but it's slowly starting to look like that, right?
Yeah, it truly is. And like I said, I'm glad and I'm blessed that you see the hope and the promise and the new era of bare-knuckle boxing, as a lot of us old-timers do. You know, I think it's going to be a tremendous opportunity for change in the sport and, I guess you could say, reviving the sport in some aspects. With that being said, Coach, I truly appreciate you coming on the show. I look forward to I want to bring you on one of my Legends in Boxing shows when I have a Legend in Boxing on. I'd love to have you on.
Absolutely.
Oh, it'd be great. Yeah. You know, we'll bring Livingstone Bramble or somebody on, or James Toney, somebody. And
there you go.
Oh, those stories are deep, bro. Yeah, you got to come on one of my Legend in Boxing shows. You'll really love that aspect.
That's my world, brother. Absolutely, I'm in. You tell me when. I could talk boxing till the sun comes up. In fact, it's funny because me went back when you know, I'd take my fighters to these UFC fights. If I ran into, you know, Wayne McCullough or even Burt Watson, I mean, we'd sit there and we'd talk about boxing till the sun comes up. And some of the wrestlers that I would train at the time would just kind of roll their eyes like, oh, are you kidding me? I got to listen to this again. So, yeah, absolutely, brother. I'm all in anytime.
Sounds good. Thank you, Coach, and I appreciate
right, brother.
You, brother. You have a good day. God bless you.
You take care of that leg, my man.
I will, my man. Peace.
All right.
Ladies and gentlemen, that was James Huey. I'm running way behind, so we're going to give MF Beck and Travis Island a call for the Misfits of Gold weekly special.
What's up, dude?
What's up, little man?
Little man, I'm taller than you, motherfucker. Maybe like a quarter of an inch or something, but I still got you.
But you're still white.
Partly.
I can see it, man. No, I'm joking. Do I got to call Travis, or is he on the line?
I'm here.
Oh, hey, look, you made it. You made it. You made it. You know,
yeah, keep it gangster. We was listening to your show, getting ready to call you, be like, bro.
Oh, come on now. You know, I kind of want to touch on a reference that kind of pissed me off. You know, I don't get people's ill attributes in life. You know, and this is really funny because if anybody knows in this sport about Don McGuire and Jacob Duran, or Stitch, as most people know him, you know that we go back many, 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 many years that we're family and that we're brothers. Why in the world, or what in the world would give you the inclination that you can call my sponsor and try to degrade me and tell him I haven't done the things that I've done in the sport, that I'm not who I am on my show, that I'm not the person that I claim to be, but yet this man has worked with me for 15 years. You know, what is it about these people that sit behind this PC culture are smart enough to figure out who they need to go to, but dumb enough to realize that they don't even have a pot to piss in when they're degrading somebody?
That's because everybody thinks that their opinions fucking matter, you know what I mean? Especially when it comes to shit that doesn't concern them. They actually, you know, technically by their basis, like, well, who are they to say that you don't know what you're talking about? Are they a professional in that field? You know, like, how can you make that fucking judgment if you yourself are not a professional in that particular area of, what do you call it? Expertise. Thank you. You know what I mean? And at the same time, too, people are just going to hate you, brother. That's like the people that comment on the sad post, you know what I mean? It's like they feel like they're going to gain some kind of relevance by talking down about you, talking bad about you, and they hope that somehow it will cause enough stir to where, you know, you'll give them some kind of publicity or something of that nature. Some kind of, you know, like you're giving them the attention they fucking crave, like a fucking spoiled child, you know. They're just making a lot of noise and they don't know what the fuck to do.
Yeah, but the point is they went to somebody who's worked with me for 15 years and tried to say that I wasn't a photographer. I don't shoot the fights that I do. I don't.
Did they tell him to kick rocks? Tell them bitches to kick rocks?
Stitch told him to kick rocks real quick. He laughed about him. He said, get the fuck out
of
here.
Point, bro. That's how close you guys are, you know what I mean? Like, I don't care what people say about me, you know what I mean? I'm just like, why were they, you know, comfortable with saying that shit around you? And that's always been my question. So it's like, it's, you know, good on fucking Stitch. That's why you guys are close. It was like somebody's going to call and say some nonsense. Your boy fucking shut them down. Problem solved.
But this is the culture we're living in nowadays, Don. I mean, we're seeing it everywhere. Every single person now, you know, whether, I mean, I know that you don't at all consider yourself a celebrity, but everybody, you know, even in the public sphere, it now seems like people are just going after anybody with a bit of notoriety, a bit of fame, to try and make themselves bigger. You know, it's publicity 101, where they always say, oh, any publicity is bad publicity. So it's like you find all these people who are going out trying to make a name off themselves by pointing this person out or showing that they're more of a just person and, you know, than the next guy. And I mean, it's sad, Don, but it's everywhere in every single walk of life nowadays, it seems.
Yeah, it's true. You know, and it's kind of weird because the show is growing immensely. The quality of fighters that I decided to attack the tree by the base because I've got these 3-1 fighters not showing up that think they're this. I've got other aspects that are just getting in the sport that confirm, reconfirm, and then they leave you hanging with dead airtime. So I got in a meeting with my sponsors and I said, you know what? I'm tired of this. I said, I could fucking call every legend there is, every champion, and they show up. No second thoughts, no questions. But yet you get these little 3-1 fighters that get this entitlement aspect, and they act like they're doing you a favor. And I said, so I'm just going to go at it different. So I started doing it different with Chuck Liddell. You know, I had him twice in 1 week. I got a lot of, you know, ridicule and a lot of people in my inbox talking crap. Then I moved on to Kendall Grove, Johnny Hendricks, Brennan Ward, and many others. And I'm getting terrific shows. I'm getting shows that a lot of people in this sport can't get. You know, and of course, it's going to create hate. It's going to create, you know, animosity because there are aspects of the sport that they can't get. But where I'm having a hard time perceiving is how can you sit back and degrade somebody when you don't even know that person? And, you know, it's like, Travis, you kind of said, Don, you may be kind of famous. You know what? People want to call me famous. People want to call me a legend. They call me whatever the fuck they want. I'm not. I'm Don. Just like I said about pictures, I don't smile on pictures because I don't want to take pictures. But at the same time, if I'm not putting my business up in your life, what right do others have, or do they feel they have the right to have to put their business up in yours and try to ruin your world?
Well, yeah, it's exactly what we're saying. I think the key difference, Don, you're seeing, and, you know, you get all these big-name fighters on, they're a big name for a reason. You know, it's because they have somewhat of, you know, at least that drive to be able to get up and to, you know, meet their responsibilities. You know, you talk about 3-1 fighters who, you know, will fuck off the show and this and that. And honestly, you know, it's the caliber of person that you're having on here. You know, and it's, you just got to be careful with everything that you do and everybody that you even associate with nowadays. Because no matter what, you're going to get somebody who doesn't like Chuck Liddell. So they go after you because you had Chuck Liddell on your show. You know, it's the stupidest fucking thing in the world, but like I said, it's that tear-down culture. It's that, you know, this new way that this younger generation has been grown up where there's no winners, there's no losers, words are violence, and, you know, anybody who's ever done anything wrong 35 years ago at a high school party, now they need to be held accountable that, you know, forever. And it just... We're moving into the realm of fantasy, Don. You know, we're no longer having that eye-to-eye, heart-to-heart conversation where, you know, you're getting these quality people and these high-caliber people in. So I think it's just something that, you know, as a community we have to work on. And also, you know, we need to take those people who are not holding up their end of the deal, the 3-1 fighters who can't make the show. And honestly, those people need to realize that they're not going to get another chance like this to, you know, be on your show to do that kind of stuff because there needs to be some bit of accountability.
You know, MF, I got a question for you. It's I want to get your reflection. We'll get, you know where I'm going. We'll get there in a minute. But
I do.
You know, I did a post today that said characterize people by their actions, and you will never be fooled by their words. What does that statement mean to MF Beck?
Fuck, you can ask any one of the people I've ever trained. It's like, you can tell me everything under the fucking sunshine. I'm going to look at you and just, all right, like, I'm not going to believe it. I'm not going to believe it. But it's, you know, if the way you are and the way you act is speaking to me louder than your words are, then I'm going to go with what's speaking louder. And 9 times out of 10, it's the more people talk about, you know, what they are, what they do, how they are, how they feel. I'm aligned to this. I'm blah, 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 blah. You know, we know somebody actually pretty good between the two of us. It's, you know it, dude. It's like the more they talk about what they do, how they do, you know, and it's almost like they're always praising themselves. You know what I mean? So it's like, what was it? I think I talked about it fucking when we had Johnny on here. It was like, I don't have to make a promise to any of you motherfuckers because you know if I say something, I'm going to fucking do it. You know, it's like the people that make the promises are like the people that talk too much. So I just pay attention to what people do and hand it out. You know, once they show me who they are, I fucking tend to believe them.
You know, hey, bro, you almost brought me to tears on that one.
Aw, did I make you blush?
You seriously made me cry. I mean, you know, and obviously I have that intent on, you know, people in life. You know, I did a live feed. I'm not going to mention any names. And, you know, to have the person come on my live feed and, you know, it was supposed to be a representation of their fighter. But the interview was 90% of them, but... You know, what I took away from that was, well, first and foremost, it was an interview that I didn't even want to do. I mean, I'm transparent. I'll say it straightforward. But to have that person come on and cry and act like he created all attributes of certain aspects of this fighter and other fighters, you know, when you seen that live feed, what were your thoughts and what were your takeaways on the little bitch move that was perplexed?
But now I know why you were crying. All that motherfucker, I'm sadistic. I didn't hear no crackle in your voice. You know? And now you just made it very clear on who you were talking about and why you're crying. Made me lose track. Sorry, I'm high. What'd you say?
Travis, I'll let you answer that.
Oh, shit, man.
I mean, see, you don't know either. He's trying to act like he remembers.
It all just matters the eyes that you see it with, Don. You know, because to the untrained eye, that might look very honest. It might look very genuine. You know, but when you know some of the background, and, you know, like we said, when you understand the character of the person that it's coming from, it has a completely 100%, you know, 180-degree flip on what he's actually saying. So I think it's up to everyone out there, you know, like we said, you have to really take into account the character of the person that any of this talking is coming from.
Yeah. I feel you. You know, I kind of want to move on because that was a really pathetic day in my life that I stretched on for many. But, you know...
You got to help the peasants sometime, dude.
Yeah. Right? But, you know, the way society is going, it's kind of got me baffled. And it kind of, you know, I was going, should I retire from the sport as a journalist and a photographer? Because I slapped my meat up against a girl's face when I was 13 years old. You know, what the hell is allowing society to perplex things into a person's life that they did when they were 13, 14, 15, 16 years old, and now make it to where you have to be held accountable for those situations. You know, I just don't understand, or I can't even ascertain the thought of now I could be held accountable for something I did when I was a minor.
Yeah, you know, there's a lot of glass houses being built around right now. Motherfuckers in there, they ain't chucking them. You know what I mean? They got a fucking pitching machine just going to town. But, dude, like, to even go back that far, it shows the type of situations where it's like, if you don't like something, you can sit there and throw a fit, and you justify ruining somebody's life to get, you know, the way you want things to happen. Because they got participation awards. You look at 90% but you look at, like, a lot of the younger generation, like, 23 younger, you know, they were all brought up that fucking their opinions matter and everybody's special and, you know, you participate this and you can get your way and fucking blah, 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 blah. So it's like you look at that and it's like now as they're becoming adults, it's translating into the real fucking world You look at who's protesting, who's doing all the fucking nonsense, who's creating the stir, who's really, like, obstructing society. It's just because they're not getting what they want. Now, granted, I may not agree with how things are happening to an extent, but I understand why they're happening, you know what I mean? And the way people are operating on it is like what Travis is saying. Just because it's something they don't like or somebody they don't like, it doesn't matter who you are. Like, in the instance with Kavanaugh and fucking Trump and shit. It's like, do I fucking trust a dude? No. I don't trust any one of the motherfucking politicians. But it's the thing that, like, scares me the most is how we're moving toward that guilty until proven innocent just because there's allegations. Although there's no proof. There's nothing backing anything up. And I'm not talking about the situation. I'm talking about, like, in general as a whole. All it takes is somebody to accuse you of some shit, and people are just automatically going to jump on that, believe it, try ruining your life. But then it's like if it comes out being false, there's no, like what Travis said, there's no accountability to the people who spread the rumors. Like what happened to people who spread rumors when we were kids? You found out about it, you know, they fucking got missing some teeth. But some things fucking happened. And it's like what's happening right now on one side is blowback because of too much control on one side where they were taught that, you know, everything that they want is going to happen. So now that it's not happening, they're freaking out. It's like, you know, children that had no rules growing up, and now all of a sudden fucking, well, now there's rules. Oh, no, we're going to throw a shit fit because we didn't get taught no fucking better. I don't know, man. It's fucking wild. Like I said, like I miss that shit that fucking humans use. I don't know. Like, I'm detached from it for the most part. It's just, I'm just worried about fucking the guilty until proven innocent. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you know, I'm kind of glad you brought up that fact. The other day I watched a video of a young African-American man sitting out in his car in front of his place of residence. He was approached by two police officers, and he was ultimately arrested for trespassing and loitering and resisting arrest and something else. Now, when you look at the aspect, and I saw the video, you know, where do we cross the line? You know, when do we as people step up and say enough is enough? I mean, and in fact, this young man was in front of his house. He was working on his car. And, you know, the reason they gave him that they wanted him out of the car and to show the ID is because, quote, unquote, he matched the description of a burglary or a robbery suspect. Well, in my eyes, it just says, oh, there was a black man that committed a crime. You're black, so, you know, we're going to pull you out of the car. You know, but when you look at it in all fairness, do you think that the policing system in the United States is not being monitored to the true aspects that it does? Do you feel that in the months and years to come that it's only going to get worse and that it's going to become a situation that's out of control and cause civil unrest?
I think it's spot on, like what you said with the civil unrest. Now, you know, I know a lot of police officers personally. I box with a bunch of them, you know. It's like, so I can't sit here and say all cops are bad, but at the same time, like, I see what the fuck is happening, dude. And a lot of the cops that are there, they were, you know, bullies in fucking high school that couldn't get into the military, couldn't do what they wanted to do, so they're just going to go fuck with everybody else. But I think the main thing that I'm noticing a lot, like, when it comes to situations like that, it's fear. It's blatant just fear, dude. That's really what it fucking comes down to. You got one side is afraid because of everything that's happening, the stigma, you know, and even just in Rancho the other fucking day, dude, we had a fucking cop that was, what, like 26, 25, you know, got fucking gunned down. Like, they're dropping like flies over here, dude, but nobody pays attention to that because, you know, they're cops, so they got fucking killed. But it's like, you got one side that's afraid because shit like that's happening, and then you got the other side because there's unjust killings that are happening on their side. But it's like, nobody's taking responsibility. It's like, the good cops aren't taking responsibility for the bad cops, and then, you know, the good black people aren't taking responsibility for the black people that are committing the fucking crimes. The only reason I'm saying that is because those are the two demographics we're talking about, right? But it doesn't really fucking matter. Everybody's going to, you know, choose their side. Like, I can't go against them because they'd all be outcasted. I'll be, you know, for example, like the Uncle Tom shit that I keep fucking hearing. I'm like, it's just fucking comedy to me. You know what I mean? I'm like, because somebody disagrees with you, automatically outcast them out of your fucking shit, out of your community, out of everything else. You ruin their fucking lives. And that goes on both sides. You know what I mean? So how can the good cops stand up for themselves when they're going to get ruined? And how can, you know, the black folk stand up for themselves when they're going to get ruined by society? So it's like, what's like the alternative, dude? It's like both sides are in complete fucking fear of the other. And it's like, who's pulling the fucking strings? Who's actually making those sides fear each other and fucking fight? You know what I mean? It's like, there's somebody controlling the fucking game. And it's like, there's no kind of fucking help, dude. Nobody's willing to stand up for it because nobody's willing to go against society. people are worried about their own shit, you know, like, well, what if this happens to me? What if this happens to me? You know, like, I could get my life ruined, even though it's like I'm technically not even in the public face anyway. It's like, no, I don't contribute to society, but everybody's worried about their own shit, their own self-preservation. So it's just a lot of fucking fear.
And I've touched on it before, Don, where, you know, until all cops are wearing body cameras with audio all the time, it ends all of these arguments, you know? It ends half of the fucking riots we end up having.
Fucking bullshit.
Yeah, exactly, because you have objective video that's going on 24/7 during every single arrest, and it's absolutely stupid to me. And that's, you know, that tags along with what MS said, where it feels like somebody's pulling the gank. You have the solution to police violence and a lot of this shit standing right in front of you, where most fucking cops are wearing body cameras anyways. They just so happen to turn them off when the fucking shootings actually happen. You know, it's absolutely ridiculous.
And you look at it on the fucking police side, too. It's like they can't turn in a fucking bad cop, because then what happens? Then the whole fucking precinct and then cops themselves. And it's like, you know, you prove that one was bad, that means the whole fucking, you know, basket's bad. And that's where a lot of that fucking bullshit comes from. Like, the cops, you know, they're an organized fucking mob themselves. You know what I mean? They're organized gangsters, no matter how anybody wants to fucking look at that shit. They're going to take care of themselves just like a fucking mafioso would. And that's just kind of the way it fucking plays. You can't implement one without fucking making the others look guilty as well. So it's like, it's all that people realize that it all starts as individuals, you know? I mean, people take an account for it. Like, people are going to be assholes. Humans are assholes. The mob is assholes. You know, in society, they're all fucking assholes. Nobody cares. But if you start with you, you know, I mean, if you act in a righteous manner, you could touch one person's life, and that life might touch another life, and so on and so on and so on. But you have to take that responsibility within yourself to just do the right thing regardless of what's fucking happening out there. And, like, I'm not afraid to condemn fucking white people in no way, shape, or form. In fact, there's a lot of white people that give motherfuckers like me a bad fucking name. You know what I mean? So, but it goes on all sides. It's just there's people that live up to stereotypes, and because of people's fear of what they don't understand and don't know, they'll project those fears onto what they don't know.
Yeah. You know what I think we should do? I think we should take about 10 or 15 of us and go find some cops sitting at the damn donut shop or whatever and tell them that they matched the description of some people they were looking for and pull them out of the car and beat the shit out of them and see how they like it.
You know, in a fucking perfect world, that would be some cool shit.
You know, I don't think that would go over so well.
Yeah, but it proved a point. Yeah, I mean, I rather, what would you say, drastic point, but nonetheless, it proved a point. I mean, it's his arrest, motherfucker.
And what really scares me, Don, is the fact that, you know, look at how much of this police brutality is coming out now that everybody has cameras in their pocket. Shit, 8 years ago, 10 years ago, nobody had a fucking cell phone that had a camera on it, and I know for a fact that things were worse. Yes, more cops were racist. There was, you know, far more discrimination going on back then than there is now.
Everybody was just blind to fucking see it, so they weren't afraid of it.
There just wasn't everyone had a fucking camera in their pocket that they could film the cops with, you know?
It's like Freddy Krueger. Nobody really knew the shit was going down, so they didn't think about it. But as soon as shit started happening, boom, kids started dying. Damn, Freddy Krueger's really like the most fucked up fucking... Wow.
Oh, no, I'm laughing because I just seen Mr. Benito, I want to be a superstar, Lopez. No, I'm joking. I just don't like some aspects of entitlement. And I, you know, our views are different. He's y'all's homie. I look at things a little different. You know, I watched a humble kid grow up to become something that he isn't. And hopefully one day in my thoughts or in my heart, he'll find himself. But, you know, and then we'll move forward in life, man. You know, it's the way things are. You know,
make it dig and then change the subject.
Well, then go ahead then, man. Spot your horn.
Uh-huh.
That's
wrong, bro. I don't know. I'm like, you're going to make a dig and then change the subject, motherfucker.
I ain't hearing nothing.
Oh, not at all. We pretty much just let it slide, you know. Benito's a good kid, but we disagree. Ain't no point in fucking, you know. Like, oh, fucking Benito this, Benito that. Yeah, I love the fucking kid, but I can see why you fucking, you know, you feel the way you do about it. And, hey, I ain't even mad at you for it.
It's just, man, it's like it goes back to, and I'll say his name. It goes back to Aaron Pico, who was scheduled to come on the show before his fight, scheduled by his coach. told his teammate, yeah, we're coming on the same show tonight. I'm not on till 8, though. And then try to play like he didn't even have an interview scheduled and try to put it on his coach. And I sent him a screenshot to the coach. You know, it's like, you're not going to fuck with me, bro. I made his coach come on the show and fill a segment. You know, I can be an asshole in life, and, you know, I'm not proud of it, but you're not going to fuck me off either. You know, and that's what
I mean, he's not the brightest kid, though, you know what I mean? Yeah, he's definitely not the sharpest bowling ball in the fucking drawer.
Right?
But he's a good kid, you know what I mean? But, yeah, he's definitely, you know, he's about the fucking, I don't know. I can't even think of something stupider to say.
Oh, man. You know, it's funny. Here I am trying to heal after doing this major fiasco and the most rookie move I could have ever pulled in all my years of being an amputee. I'll take full responsibility for this because it was my fault. I can't blame anybody. I still have to sit here and wait another damn 3 weeks to figure out if I'm going to have that surgery or not. Damn, it sounds like we're on Amtrak, MF.
No, it's like it's something just, yeah, never mind. I got the problem solved.
maybe we
had a technical error. I was trying to pack a bowl and talk to you at the same time, and my hands were just fucking, yeah, all of
it. Oh, the only show in America that we could talk about anything we want to, and we get shut down by the FCC, but it's cool. No, it's
somebody was hacking us earlier.
You know, I'm just reiterating on, you know, one thing I realized when I did injure myself and I had a tremendous show scheduled for that Tuesday, I wasn't going to do it. Kendall Grove still wanted to come on, and therefore the management company hit me, and I was going to say no. And then I realized that the moment you sit still is the moment that you become a reflection, not just in the sport, but in all aspects of life. So I went ahead and I did the show, and you and I both know the show must go on. Wednesday, I couldn't do the show with you because I was, let's just face it, I was too medicated out. I should have did the show that night. I was too medicated out. You know, but I had this great interpretation of how the show was going to go Tuesday night with Kendall Grove, a fighter that I respected, a fighter that I appreciated, and I was so amped to have him on the show. And then I get him on, and within 30 seconds, he had probably used the F word probably 7 times. And the whole hour-long interview went this way. You know, so I'm still sitting here today perplexing whether I should delete the episode or not. Do you, in your guys' eyes, when a fighter feels that comfortable and he speaks that way on a show, do you feel it takes away from his character, or do you feel, in my aspects, it's my job to delete that episode so people don't look at that fighter in a different manner?
Are you talking about me, Don? I mean, shit.
No, I'm talking about Kendall.
I don't know who's drawing the line here, man. You know, I think you got to just let that person represent himself the way he'd want. You know, I mean, I say a whole lot of dumbass controversial shit, and I would. So it won't affect your opinion of me, Don.
No, bro.
You didn't know
what
to try
for. I mean, and for my listeners, please excuse me. I'm probably going to get a letter from the FCC. But he was like, I was fucking walking to the fucking park, and I fucking saw my homie, and we fucking kicked it, and we were fucking just chilling, you fucking know, homie. And I was just like, really? And I'm
like, well, he certainly illustrated the diversity of the word. He's using it the way you would use up. You know, that there's a lot of people who they'll have a word, whether it be like, or I know with me personally, it's you know. I end up saying you know, you know, you know all the fucking time on here, but he's just using the word fuck like ump, essentially.
Yeah. And here I was so stoked to do this freaking interview. You know, and then I get it, I go, oh, my God, please let this end at 30 minutes. An hour later, we're still on the air, still the same dialogue, and I was just, I don't know, I was beside myself. I mean, to me, there's a time and a place for everything, and I think if you're going to come on to a syndicated radio show, then you need to have a little restraint. Am I wrong or right in that aspect?
I think you're right on a professional aspect. You know, but I look at it in kind of the same way. But, you know, like, I'd be a little stoked about it just on the dude feeling comfortable enough to be himself around you. You know what I mean? Like, you have that effect on people, bro. There's that stuff. See, even though it may have been, like, kind of scummy or even just, like, you know, bad, what would you say?
Bad PR.
There, thank you, bad PR. But at the same time, it's like, dude, like, he was comfortable enough to be himself around you, bro. You know, it's like, and if worse comes to worse, I mean, shit, if anything, other people are going to listen to the show and be like, yeah, I don't know if I want that motherfucker on the show. You know what I mean? So it's like, you can look at it like, yeah, I was unprofessional, but it's like, on a bright note, silver lining, though, like, it was comfortable enough around you, you know, and other people might hear it and be like, yeah, you might have just saved somebody else some trouble. So you can be like the Captain Save-A-Ho for a day.
Not everyone can always be as eloquent as we are.
No. It's certainly not me. I mean, shit, I cuss like a fucking sailor, but at least I have some kind of dignity behind it. You know what I mean? Some kind of explanation. There's not really shock value behind what I say. Sometimes. More or less.
Yeah, right. You know, I did something that I don't usually do, and I did it because you guys actually introduced it to me. And then he's been on the show a couple times. And MF, you already know about this, but... I had two tremendous facets of the music industry on my show, and we were getting close to the ending of the interview, and I asked them. I said, you know, you guys know I found four artists last year, and where they ended up being. And I said, you know, I kind of correlated myself with a couple more. I'd be, you know, I was wondering if you'd be willing to listen to this artist and give me your thoughts. So I went ahead and I played a little bit of Johnny. And they completely fell in love with the aspect of Johnny. So now I've correlated Johnny with Greater Than Life Entertainment and three different artists that, you know, run this label. And so now good things are going to be popping off for Johnny. What is it about the aspect of the Misfits of Gold that allows you guys to find people like Jay and Oleg, Johnny? I mean, because there's something transpiring here that is allowing fighters to actually find their true calling in life and actually some of them find success.
You know, it comes back to what we always talk about, Don, and, you know, me and MF, we take a long look at people, you know. You got to really, you just got to be around people who are genuine, you know, and it doesn't matter what area of life that they're in, you know. It doesn't matter if they're a journalist or if they're a musician or if they're a fighter or if they're a computer programmer. You know, you just want to surround yourself with people who are genuine, who are honest with themselves, and who are honest about what they're doing. And, you know, it just seems like those people in life, they find a way. You know, they get linked up with one or two other good people, and eventually it brings it, you know, to a place like this, where you find somebody with enough networking that good people get pushed through, you know. It's not always fast. It's not always as easy as, you know, just selling out and being, you know, whoever's bitch to get the gold. But if you're that genuine, honest person and you're genuine with all the people around you, you know, eventually you're going to run into people and you're going to be able to pursue the things that you want to do, you know. It's just, it all comes back to just being honest and being real and being honest with yourself. You know, it shines through because you can tell that that's something that Johnny likes. That's something he's always done. Like fighting, you know, like all the other things we have going on in here. But it's him being honest with himself, and that shines through, and I think it's true to everybody.
Jeez. Ding, ding, motherfucker.
The round is over.
Happy accident.
You know, one thing that's kind of crazy, you know. God, people are just blowing my phone up. I apologize. Call you
that
back.
Makes two of us.
We're infamous, I guess. I don't know. You know, one thing that I wanted to make poignant on the show today was, you know, I've had time to think about it and I've had time to reflect, and, you know, there wasn't really much going on in the world this week except for them, you know, cremating Kavanaugh. You know, I was going to do a meme that said, you know, I got caught masturbating in my mom's bathroom at 8 years old, so now I must step down from being a Supreme Court justice. And people said that, you know, it's kind of a touchy subject right now, you know. You know, I don't know. You know, my problem with it all is, and I know we got right back to this, but my problem with it all is kind of like what you said, MF. Why do they gotta wait until a person finds where they need to be in life or gets to a certain extent of fame or, you know, a character status in life, and then they got to demean them, then they got to bring it out? Why couldn't they do it at the time of the occurrence, or why do they have to wait so many years, I guess, is the best way to analyze this question.
Well, I'm gonna give it to you from my strategic standpoint, and that's pretty much just it. So everybody listen to this. This is just a strategy standpoint. Don't look at fucking political bias or partisan or anything like that. Just look at it from a strategy standpoint. This is a chessboard. And it was actually showing out that what they're trying to do is delay, you know, Kavanaugh getting the seat so they can actually, you know, hopefully win the elections or replace that shit so they can start getting their control back. This is a power struggle, you know what I mean? And it's being played by both sides. Both sides have an agenda. Both sides have a particular, like, strategic standpoint or focal point that they're using. The left right now is trying to, you know, get a fucking, what do you call it? The left is trying to get somebody in with the fucking Kavanaugh's place or whatever because they don't want somebody in there that Trump appointed. Because if Trump appointed them, you know, they're losing spots. And also, too, like, you look at California, what's happening right now between fucking Newsom and Cox, that's another thing they're worried about. But here's the thing that, like, caught my attention was that wasn't it released that Hillary's emails were, you know, hacked by Chinese fucking government at one point in time just recently, too? And then all of a sudden the shit goes on with Kavanaugh. So it's like a double whammy for them, you know. It's like they had to create some kind of controversy to stall and to take away the attention of the fact that fucking a lot of emails were leaked to fucking China. You know what I mean? It's blatantly what the left is fucking doing right now, and that's just apparent. And it's like, it could be that if the Republicans were doing that, people would be all over that shit like fucking flies on stink. You know what I mean? It's just the way it fucking goes right now. It's like the Republicans are the devils. People are going to overlook some shit. And the Democrats are fucking, what do you call them? Slave farmers, and fucking people are worried about that shit. So it's just a fucking giant chessboard that's being played right now, and you got to look at the whole picture. What are they distracting with Kavanaugh? Why are they using the points they did? Fart jokes and fucking drinking games, dude? Like, really, it's like that's where we're going for this because if that guy can't fucking run it? It's like your point on what you said, Don. You know, it's like, how can we judge somebody for what they did when they were a fucking teenager? Not even a legal adult teenager, but we're supposed to go back and judge that person's life because everybody was fucking saints. There's not one saint that hasn't been a sinner first and fucking foremost.
I mean, and let alone what the allegations that are coming forward, it's not rape, it's not murder, you know. They're defining what every single 15, 16, 17-year-old high school boy does at every single party. You know, we're denying the fact that boys want to fuck girls. And when you're in high school, that's basically all that's going on, you know. And so you're going to come out 35 years later and say that he was sexually aggressive towards me at a high school party? Well, by that fucking account, then every single male in this fucking country is a sexual predator. And that's what they want. You know, it's like exactly like MF said. It's a power ploy from fucking top to bottom, and it's being used to distract from the actual things that are going on.
You know, I kind of have to agree with you there. You know, I don't know, man. Things have just been, so many things have been going through my head the way society has equated itself. And, you know, I just don't get it anymore. I truly have given up, man. I mean.
Well, you know the fight world, Don. Look at it this way. What happens when you're on defense the whole fucking time? Well, 9 times out of 10, what's happening during the fight when you're on defense the whole time? You're fucking losing, right? Point blank fucking period. Right now you have two sides going at it, where one is literally making power plays like as we fucking speak, and everything is being handed to them on a fucking silver platter, because the other side is literally just abandoning all caution and doing whatever the fuck they can to just obstruct. I guess we'll say it that way. They're just trying to obstruct, you know what I mean? It's like somebody who's already lost the fight, but they're just not going down. They're being fucking stubborn about shit. But with that being said, for the last 2 to 3 years, they've been spending all of their time on defense. Defense, defense, defense. How can we stop them? How can we stop them? How can we stop them? And then the other side has been like, oh, well, we're going to do this, and we're going to make this little grab and this little grab, all while you guys are just trying to stop us, and all it's doing is helping our cause because the people fucking believe otherwise because, you know, it's like the left is turning out to be a fucking boogeyman, and people are waking up like they just don't want that. So what happens? People like Trump get elected. Shit like what Kavanaugh is fucking happening. Like right now, like they like California is fucking in super danger of going fucking turning fucking red. So look at like how it's so much discord and like everybody's being played against themselves, dude. But it's like I'm worried about like a totalitarian system because if the Democratic Party falls, that's what's fucking ushering in.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy, man. The way things are going, I don't know. It makes my job as a journalist. I mean, it's kind of hard because where do you go with shit? It's like, you know. And then the other day I was watching TV, which I hardly ever do, and I watched this with a show called 90 Day Fiancé, where they meet each other over the internet. They say they're in love with each other. They want to marry each other, and then they go meet each other. And I mean, this has got to be the most fucking hilarious, asinine show I've ever seen. You know, has the point of society, I mean, as far as even relationships are concerned, gone to the point that a picture on a TV screen is more relevant than a person that's standing in front of you? Where did the disconnect, you know, go, and where's it gonna lead to in the future? Or I mean, are we gonna have sex over a fucking FaceTime? Or you know, what is the aspect of life, and where's it going?
You ever seen that movie WALL-E? I think Pixar did it. You ever seen it?
Yeah, that robot.
Where the robots tried to fucking clean Earth, and it's like you showed the people. It was like they were so fat and so fucking just out of shape, and everybody's going around in these things that fucking float, and it's like they were literally just distracted. Like, entirely distracted, like, no human contact whatsoever. And then it was like, it showed the man and woman fucking actually hold hands, and that was, like, enough to spawn where it looked like they were getting ready to get fucking married. You know what I mean? Just off that little bit of human interaction. So look at it that way, because, like, humans are social creatures, right? So everything is happening with social media, the profiles of this. We're connected to everybody through our fucking phone, but when you see people that are around each other, what are they doing? They're on their fucking phones. Like, everybody's distracted. It's like we crave human interaction, but yet when we actually get to that point of face-to-face, either A, people get anxiety because they're fucking afraid because they have no idea what they're doing. I mean, you really can't fucking blame them. You know, they're distracted by their phone. They're distracted by fucking something else. So it's like, what do they do? All of a sudden, you get shows like that. 90-day fucking fiancé is like, really, within 90 days? It's like experts and psychologists even talk about that. Like, the honeymoon period lasts, what, about fucking 90 days? So it's like, you're literally, like, making a show to where you're going to ruin these people's fucking lives for the moment. You know, you're going to give them, like, the most amount of hell because they're going to want to get married during the honeymoon phase. They get pushed into it, everything else. Now they're all over the fucking TV to get their 15 seconds of fame. And then what happens? 10 years later, they're on drugs, fucking 5 divorces, you know what I mean? All because of that one fucking moment because they've been deprived of human interaction.
Yeah. You know, the show just made me laugh, man. I was just sitting there because someone went to Uganda. I mean, she's like 300 pounds, something like that. And she really believed this guy loves her and he wants to marry her. No, bitch, he wants his green card. And I'm just dying. But you know what? I guess that's the way life is going and I'm just going to have to deal with it. On that note, you know, we haven't let the philosopher side of my little girlfriend, Travis, out today. Travis, what is your philosophical? I can't even speak today.
Philosophical, motherfucker.
Yeah, there we go. Man, I can't help it. I'm filled out.
Hey, I'm high. You got no excuse. Well, you're probably high, too. But
I'll take it one level deeper here, Don. I'll take that exact TV show. I know what you're talking about because my mom actually watches it. And it actually makes me think of another show called Moonshiners. You know, what you're looking at is people are committing marriage fraud on TV, which is illegal. You know, I don't even think that you get all of these TV shows like 90 Day Fiancé, and it's scripted so deeply to the point that I don't even believe it's real in the fact that that lady's really from Uganda or this or that. You know, I remember watching a TV show called Moonshiners, which is about, you know, North Carolina and these guys who make moonshine. And most of the show is about the people making the illegal moonshine. But then every now and then, it switches to the cops. And the cops have cameras with them, too, and they're following around looking for the moonshiners, but yet the moonshiners are on fucking Discovery Channel. Just turn on Discovery Channel, and you can see exactly who the fuck it is. But yet they're filming both sides of the police and the people doing illegal moonshining. And it's on, you know, Nat Geo History Channel fucking regular TV. So I'm at the point now, Don, where basically any bit of thing I see on network television, like 90 Day Fiancé, like this or that, I don't even believe that the scenario is real anymore. I think it's all acting from top to bottom because technically speaking, what these people are doing is fucking illegal. It doesn't make, you know, and people don't look at the next layer of it. So I guess my philosophical nugget for the week would just be look at the propaganda around you everywhere. Every bit of television show and every bit of advertising, you know, it's all propaganda on one level or another.
Yeah, it truly is. You know, oh, man, one thing I do want to touch on. And it's my show, and I know you people listen to me because you're
yourself.
Quit sending me your damn pussy pictures. I don't want to see your pussy. I don't care to see your titties. I don't care. You know, stop sending me that shit. You know?
You just called it a boogeyman, dog.
Yeah, now people are going to start sending dick pics and asshole pics. You're going to get all types of brown eyes. They're coming
they
your
would,
way.
They would know if you didn't bring that shit up, bro.
You fucked up.
Well, like, I'm going to just let that slide. You were talking about, I'm going to touch on something. Stop sending me pussy pictures. Like, what, a motherfucker, you was touching on yourself talking about pussy pictures? Like, send us some dick and asshole pics. Let's really fucking spice it up.
Oh, man, you forget the power that I have. Don't fuck with me. Don't fuck with me. I'm a syndicated Tuesday night show with my biggest audience. I'll let your phone number slip on air. No. But no,
small
things,
bro.
I'm tired of waking up every morning to that shit. You know, it's like, if I want to see that, I'll pick up a Playboy or a Penthouse or something, you know? I mean,
no, wait, you gotta be all buttholes. You got a problem with Hustler?
It's gonna be all buttholes from here on out.
Oh, God. On that note, we're gonna end this show on a butthole analogy. Jeez.
Brown eye.
Hey, Crystal Gale, she said it best. Let me turn your brown eye blue. And on that note...
All right, Pistol Pete.
All right. We're going to hand it over to Travis for his final thoughts, and then we'll turn it to MF Beck for his final thoughts of the day.
I found a new podcast this week that I've really been enjoying. It's with Greg Carlwood. It's called The Higher Side Chat. So everyone check it out. That's my plug for the week.
Man, send them my listeners somewhere else, bro. What the fuck?
Hey, if they like extra conspiratorial bullshit like this, man, we need more of it, Don. There's not
good,
enough programs like yours out there.
With Pat Miletich, then, bro.
Hey, man, there's another one. And actually, speaking of that, they were on another podcast of mine that I enjoy, Tinfoil Hat with Sam Tripoli. They actually just did a swap cast with Pat Miletich and the Conspiracy Farm the other day. So check those out as well.
Oh, yeah, definitely dope shows. MF, your random thought of the week and not Travis.
Random thought, I guess I'll just keep it on the subject we were talking about earlier about what the whole fucking thing that the government's supposedly doing or just how things work. Just on a strategic standpoint, mainly. Look at it just like chess and look like everything else. All warfare is based on deception, first and foremost. So anytime there's a fight, anytime there's a war, anytime there's some kind of two parties going at it, everything is going to be based off deception. So if you see something, you have to understand there's another part that's not being shown to you. And you got to kind of learn to read between the lines and come up with your own answers. Sometimes you'll be right, sometimes you'll be wrong. But either way, you shouldn't just believe what anybody fucking tells you. Even me. Even me. Take it with a grain of salt. I'm fucking crazy.
On that note, man, it's... You know, I apologize for not being up to par on today's show. I'm a little medicated. I'm still in quite a bit of pain, but as I said earlier...
We've been smoking the whole time.
Oh, man, screw you. That'll come after my show. I mean, I had to be relevant for my first guest, but, you know, the show must go on, and therefore I did today, and I'm going to try to. Still can't walk, but so it's going to even make it more fun trying to get from the studio back to my room, but... On that note, appreciate it, bruh. Appreciate it, Travis. Till next week, y'all have a good time, man, and thank you for making my show what it is.
Stop, drop, and roll, dog. Stop, drop, and roll.
Peace. Later, bro. Ladies and gentlemen, that was a Misfits of Gold. I'm hurting, so we're going to get the hell out of here. Today's show wasn't really on point, but it is what it is, so we're going to get out of here right now. Have a good day, and God bless.
Yeah. Hear me? Hey. My G killing with the
West, hey.
Hey, let's show them how to do it. Stoves, hard stand, cheese, riveting. Come on, let's kill them on this one. Let's show these youngsters how to do it, yeah. Cause they doing it wrong. We doing it right. Hey. Shout out Hart fam, this coming from the Hart fam. But that nigga Daniel, we pull up in the dark van. 18 hopping on no bed like we parachuters, man.